You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Because there's nothing like a weekend pause with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
You can work from the road while turning your vehicle into a powerful high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On a network that covers more roads than any other carrier, connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi to see if you're eligible for a free trial today. Based on independent third-party data, always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Welcome to She Pivots. I'm your host, Emily Tisch Sussman. One of my goals in starting this podcast is to highlight voices and stories of women who went through something deeply personal, only to come out of it on the other side better than they could have imagined. After launching She Pivots last year, it's clear it's not a small group. This applies to most women, whether it's a big pivot or even just a tiny pivot. What's clear is there's still a lot of unpacking to do around pivoting. So as we're continuing to build this platform and community through new episodes, I wanted to also bring you more stories, unfiltered and honest. So I'll be sitting down with more women, maybe the occasional man, some of whom have mastered their own pivot. Some are just starting the pivoting journey. Or some just have something to teach us about the deeply personal moments of life. So stay tuned for more of these candid conversations this season. Let's jump right in. This conversation today is probably one of the most substantive that I'm going to have on this podcast about what it means to pivot and what it means for your identity when you're doing all of that, because this is the expert in this field as it is evolving right now, the founder and, I guess, principal of Mother Untitled, Neha Roosh. Neha, let me just formally welcome you to She Pivots.
Oh, thank you.
So we were just chatting a little bit about how we met, and I'm going to give it to you to recount.
You had just written that fabulous piece for She Knows, that my kids killed my career, and not one, but like 50 people sent it to me, but two in particular said, like, you two must meet. And I feel like we made that happen within 30 seconds.
Yeah, I feel like I had the flip side of it. As soon as I wrote the article, people were like, but you must have gotten this from Neha. And I was like, tell me more about Neha. I'd love to meet her. So how did you start it?
So when I had my first son in 2016, he was born New Year's Day. And it was at the like height of the girl boss era. Lean In had been the rallying cry of my business school graduation. And yet when I was rocking in that chair with him, I felt this sense of contentment and belonging that I had been looking for. I'm not going to paint that with like rose-colored lenses and say like I wasn't leaking milk and like sleep deprived, but I did find something I'd been looking for and lacking in my career to that point. And I'd, you know, spent a decade in advertising. I'd just gotten my MBA. The expectations were high on my like very linear career track, but I said at that point that I wanted to downshift. And I started to come face to face with like all the societal stigma that comes with the quote unquote stay-at-home mother, right? So I started hearing like, oh, you took a spot at Stanford. Like you took that spot just to stay at home. And or like, what are you going to do all day? All of the perceptions that you assume with choosing to focus your life on caregiving for a chapter. And meanwhile, on the opposite like days when I wasn't still consulting, because I initially downshifted, I was meeting all these incredible women who were the women you assume. Like, they were in New York, they'd built huge, wonderful, meaningful careers, and were saying, you know what, I want to take a thoughtful pause and make room for family life for a moment. Or, I really trust my career today, and I'm going to start to freelance or consult just to build in some more flexibility. And none of it matched this caricature that I was being served up of the stay-at-home mom. And I was looking around, and there was a ton of traditional content around the working mother, quote unquote, but everything had abandoned the stay-at-home mother in the 1950s.
But did you really feel like there were professional women, even in 2016, like, I'm not talking like 15 years ago,
yeah,
but that many years ago, that were openly saying, I'm looking to take some kind of downshift for personal reasons?
Yes.
Because I didn't feel like I heard that. Maybe it was because I was in Washington and in politics, and you didn't exist if you didn't work in politics. I mean, people that worked in different industries that live in Washington were like, yes, I was, what did my friend refer to himself as? He said he was like Mr. Cellophane in Chicago. Like, everyone just like looked right through him because he wasn't important in politics. But so I felt like I didn't necessarily hear people acknowledging that.
Right.
You did hear that.
I did. But you had to stop to listen to hear it, because it was layered with a little bit of shame.
Yeah.
Not a little bit, but it was masked. I mean, and by the way, like, one of my favorite anecdotes is, I was sitting at a dinner and there was a woman I knew who worked 2 days a week. And I worked 2 days a week at that time. And I identified with being on a pause or a downshift. And she was like, no, I'm a full-time working mother. And it was, and I was looking at her and thinking, we work the exact same amount and yeah, we're at home the exact same amount. But there was a sort of veil of, and I wouldn't say that she was intentionally masquerading, which, you know, her version of balance, it was, she identified and didn't, she identified with working out of the home, and she did not want to identify with any sense of slowing down.
Yeah. I hear it as that she didn't want to lose that, like, the privilege of that identity.
Yes.
Of being a working out of home person. Like, whether it was mother or not mother, but like a out of home working person. She didn't want, yes, to lose the privilege of that identity.
Yes. And so the short answer is, there were incredible numbers of women who were already making room for family life. And what I will tell you also is, what I was looking at was, if you go back to 2016, Pew Research was already saying this generation of women identify with motherhood more. There was a rise of flex work, right? Like the wing work, WERK, the flexible work marketplace, it was all on the rise. So I was looking at it saying, like, you're going to see an increasing population of women who have the access to be able to create a career on their own terms, and an increasing number of women who want to make room for other priorities for a period of time. And so, you know, I think a lot of it was the moment in time in 2016 was this perfect collision of, like, me wanting my own space where I could start to string together a collective of women who are reshaping the narrative for my own sake, to say, like, wait, there's like an incredible cohort of women that I belong to. And also feeling like there was a dearth of any representation of anything that was beyond the prototypical.
Yeah, that wasn't like the black and white, like,
yes,
the working, not working. You know, it's interesting, over the course of doing the interviews and doing this show, is that I anticipated that two points would be common that I would hear as, like, the intervening life event, like the personal thing that changed your perspective. I anticipated it being, one, having kids whenever you had them, although I definitely don't have exclusively mothers on the show. And the other being the pandemic,
yeah,
as being things that had really reshaped people's perspective in their lives. And what has surprised us as we go through these interviews is, more likely it's actually 2016 and the election, the surprise that people felt in the election of Donald Trump, and what they thought that meant for their own identities as women working out of home or not, and the country's perception of, like, what was acceptable. You happened to have had your son in 2016, which I also did.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a factor in it for you at all? Like, I've just heard that from so many guests. Do you think that, I don't know, changed your perspective, but added to the perspective that you were, as you were thinking about your change in identity?
That's such an interesting part of it. I think that now you said that, and I remembered this picture I have of my three best friends from home. So I'm really close to my friends from home, and they had all come. I was the first to have a child, and we have a picture of Bodhi. I'd brought, like, American flag balloons. We thought we were electing the first female, right?
Yeah.
And that was what we really believed, sitting in, like, the New York City echo chamber. And in that moment, I remember feeling the most feminist I'd ever felt. And, you know, so much of Mother Untitled, when we parse around where do the stigmas exist around quote unquote stay at home mother, one of them is around if you choose to pause, you are an anti-feminist, which is obviously like a trope that we want to upend. Whereas I was feeling the most connected to women that I'd ever felt. And I think that to your point, 2016 was a feeling of banding together, wanting to do our part, believing so much so that my feminism was not dictated by whether I was working out of the home or in the home, but because I was part of this collective voice, advocating for what felt right for us and our families at the time. And I do think that collective power in 2016 probably did help shape that sense of wanting to be a part of it, wanting to explore it and pull the threads apart.
I mean, you make a good point about what I consider to be feminism right now, I think, as compared to like what we had been taught as kids. And I think the way that our parents thought about feminism is that I just think generationally, like I just think it's the way it had to happen. You know, like, I don't know that it could have happened another way. Maybe it could have. I don't know. But the way that women went to work out of home was to emulate men.
Mm-hmm.
And so they couldn't show up in the workplace as anything other than I am showing up essentially as a man in a workplace.
Yes, yes. And, you know, if you really go back to the history, because as I've been writing the book, it's been really interesting delving into it, more the origins of like first wave, second wave, third wave feminism. Women went into the workforce really during the World War to just fill the slots. And then it just exposed this, wait a second, we want to like stay in the workforce. Except at the same time, there was this incredible push around advertising and the advent of television. We started to see these ads depicting the woman at home wearing heels, pushing a vacuum around. And what emerged was this like huge chasm, this power chasm between the woman in the workplace making money and the woman like teetering around in heels, like serving up her like cocktails at the end of the day. And that power chasm never went away. And, you know, the media really invented the mommy wars, like just because like media loves a moment where they can like pit two sides against each other. And so the mommy wars were like invented over the course of the 80s. And we created this power chasm that really like obviously had to close over the years because so much changed. Women had access to digital learning so that they're able to like keep their hand in the game. They were like getting married and having kids much later. So they'd accrued education and work experience. None of the fictions around that like ad with the woman pushing the vacuum in heels actually existed. And yet we sort of inherited it and brought it with us and like perpetuated the idea of what was feminist and what was not.
Right. Yeah. And now I feel like my acceptance, like my version of feminism is just to say like, do what makes you happy.
Mm.
Like not everyone's going to have the same model. In fact, nobody can have the same model as anybody else. But I actually don't think that the generation above us has an easy time accepting that because it wasn't the way for them.
No. And I think that version of feminism had to exist, right? Like
yeah.
Second wave feminism had to exist to push women, you know, into a place of being respected for their contributions and their value in the workforce and the ability to advocate for equal pay, like all of that stuff that, by the way, we still need all of that.
Yeah.
And so I think the generation prior would say, we aren't done. We're not done with that. Why are we like pushing choice feminism now? Is it going to unwind this? And I think what's interesting about feminism today is I don't think it's just about, yes, we want the choice and like we should all do whatever makes us happy and strong and all the things. We're advocating for the supports to be able to set us up for success on feminine terms, right? It's recognizing that we can't, like we do birth children.
Yeah.
Our bodies are actually constructed differently. And so the workforce and or like the way in which we approach work and family has to align with the realities of what it means to be a woman, which means taking a closer look at what that is, right? And so it's interesting because when I first launched Mother Untitled, I did feel like a lot of women perceived what I was doing as in some ways traditionalist, when by no means, first of all, let me just say, like, I don't actually think choosing to pause or downshift your career at any point is the right thing for children and or the right thing for families. I think it was the right thing for me in that moment. And I think many women either because they can't offset the cost of childcare and or because they actually want to be at home for a period of time, that is the right choice for them because it works for their families. But it's not, you know, there's proven successful outcomes for children and families, no matter what, whether you're working in the home or out of the home or existing in between. But when I started, I think a big thought was, well, she's encouraging women to pause. And what I would say is, no, I'm trying to create a narrative wherein if women choose to pause or downshift, if they do step out of the traditional workforce for a period of time, they're not only respected and valued for the contribution in the home, but they're not seen as their brain dying. Yes. So that when and if they choose to go back, which 90% of women do and aim to do, when and if they choose to go back, they have an easier time entering because they're not written off and counted out as like shriveling in like their homes.
Yeah, it's so funny you put that language saying that it was seen as traditionalist, because even though I was basically launching like a corollary concept, I think at first I also saw it as traditionalist. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but wait, I want to talk about the workplace. And I think it was because I had such a hard time seeing myself. I think it's why I identified with that story you were saying about the woman who like couldn't see herself as not working. I couldn't see myself outside an identity as not a working person.
Mm-hmm,
and it had nothing to do with being a mother or not. Like I didn't necessarily want to be like a working mom.
Right.
I just couldn't. It was too hard for me to accept my identity as anything other than a working person. And so no matter how much I was working, it was hard for me to give the same, and I think I probably still struggle with this, but to give the same level of acknowledgement of like the work that goes in if someone is not doing any work outside the home and in any way, like whether it's a little bit part-time or, full-time. But I think I still struggle with that. I think it's so ingrained in my identity that the place that I find value is whether the work products that I create in work outside the home is valuable.
Yes.
It's so ingrained in me that it's very hard to view myself in terms of success, like being successful in any other way.
I think it's the single biggest stumbling block for women when they choose to part with the linear career track. Even if they're not identifying with taking a full pause to be at home, like even if they're doing anything apart from the linear career track that they were on, it's this idea of so much self-worth is tied to our salary and our titles. And I mean, that's the thesis around Untitled with Mother Untitled, is this idea that when you step into this untitled chapter, we part with a lot of the ego and the identity derived from career ascension. And what does that feel like to exist in the like vastness of the untitled space, right? And by the way, the other part of untitled is the dismantling between the antiquated titles of stay-at-home and working mother, right? And so stay-at-home, you can understand why we would champion to start to blur the edges around that because it's so black and white. It comes with so many societal tropes. But working mother, right? When you so closely, what I'm hearing from you is you so closely hold on to like, I am a working mother, that anything that is not that, or that is working in other ways, whether you're volunteering or whether you're working in the home, feels antithetical as opposed to just part of an expansive identity.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that is the opportunity for women right now is to exist in the gray, is to exist in that vast in between, and say that way you're not confined to worth and success in one format, and your options are open so that you can sort of tap into what you need to make room for in that moment in time without penalty on the other side.
Right. I think it's so, they're so complementary, like what you're doing and what we're doing with She Pivots. I respect your work so much, and I always look at them as being sort of like two sides of the same coin. Like, I feel like what we're trying to do with She Pivots is to tell the stories about the personal events that happens to someone that changes their perspective so that they can then find a different thing they create, whether it's a career, whether it's a business, like whatever, maybe it's happiness in the same thing, but changing their perspective due to personal reasons and then finding something professional that comes out of it, like changing that narrative around that. And I feel like you are really sitting in that place, like in that moment of the change, and specifically for mothers in the childcare. And I think that there's a lot of debate around like, you know, should we just talk about parenthood? Should we just talk about motherhood? Should we just talk about women in general? I get that a lot. We just did our first He Pivots, but you know.
Really?
Oh, yes. It was our very first.
Which is a gift, by the way, for men. I think that men need that permission. By the way, there's a rising stat around men choosing to pause their careers. But I think men, unfortunately, are, you know, feeling limited sometimes by the expectations of what that role is supposed to include, being a male partner in a family, in a two-parent household, right? And so then when men find themselves at career junctures that we have a lot of discourse around,
yeah,
they don't have the same resources and conversation. And I think that is one of the privileges of being a woman, is that we talk a lot, especially you and I. I mean, like, we like to talk.
Yeah, we could do the show. We make this like a 24-hour talkathon. We could go all day.
But I do think, like, I think about, for the male at-home parent right now, there, you know, at least women who choose to pause or take a nonlinear path have your podcast. They have Mother Untitled. That there is an absence of that. So I'm glad that you're doing the He Pivots.
I totally agree. I think that even what I'm seeing, or I feel like most people I know who had kids pandemic on, like in the last 3 years, are gay men, is most of the parents that I know, and of new parents that I know. And of the parents that I see of kids that are sort of school age, when parents are starting to kind of like group off and like make plans, I find it hard for, I think, the gay dads in particular to find their place, because they just sort of don't naturally fall into any of the like very hetero categories of like the way that families tend to group. And so I think we do need to be intentional about this. And I actually try to talk about this every time we have these like parenting talks, but like, think about the makeup of the parents in your class, like how they naturally have these random encounters and like, you know, how they'd get included. But, you know, a part of the reason that I decided to only have women on She Pivots and even call it She Pivots, well, after I got the cease and desist order, but then there was an intentional reason after that. And I thought I actually wasn't giving up that much. Like, yes, men need it, but I actually don't think men are evolved enough right now to be able to have a really thoughtful conversation about where they feel included, excluded, how they think about their identities. Like, I think most male conversations right now would unfortunately be a little bit too stunted. It would be like a real short podcast. So hopefully season 10 of She Pivots is, maybe it's a full He Pivots. I don't know. Here's new ideas. Because I agree with you, the world needs it. The way that I ended up attacking it was by another article that I wrote called Sensitive is the New Strong, thinking about raising our sons. And looking at it from that perspective, like we're always talking about, you know, we've had these ideas that we need to, especially a son is showing sensitivity, then we have to show them how to overcome that sensitivity. But I want my son to see his sensitivity as an attribute.
Yes. Yes.
And then I think we can start to have a generation of men that will be thinking about talking about their feelings, how they see their identities. But like, we're of a generation right now of like parenting young kids. Like, we can build them up from scratch. Like, we have huge opportunity.
You know, as you're talking, I'm reminded of one of the biggest differentiators of our generation of parents is just the intellectual nature of parenting today, right? Like, we talk a lot about the impact. If you do nothing else and you're focused on raising your children right now and bringing love and care to that, you know, you're raising the love generation. And I think that a lot of the women that make up our communities are very intentional, very conscious parents who really, I mean, there is such a wealth of information, maybe too much information around parenting.
Yeah.
And this is the first generation of parents that have been exposed to that and are taking that in. And whether you're focused on nutrition or you're focused on gentle parenting or respectful parenting, that is a level of intellectuality that is unparalleled with any other generation. And so it's both impactful and it's a lot more around self-healing and self-growth. And one of the things we talk a lot about, and this is another way women are, you know, an evolved species, is that when women step in to parenthood today, we're not only committed to how can we raise our children meaningfully, but how can we raise ourselves alongside?
Yeah.
And that is something really interesting when I think about, you know, the power. You talk about the pivot. I talk a lot about the power in the pause and in the transition. And I think a lot of that power lies in the personal development that this sort of time and transition in our life is so so primed for.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk about that power in that moment, because I struggle with a little bit sometimes, and I think that I'm gleaning that you do too, is what's interesting here is that we're building businesses around not being in the business we were in before. And so in some ways it's great because we can design the way we want to work and what we put out into the world, and it feels meaningful. It feels like culture change, but there's also a little bit of attention around it.
100%. I mean, I said for a long time, so there is a great irony in building the first platform for women on career pauses and changing the narrative around career pauses while being on a career pause. And so the thing that I have had to sit with and the discomfort has been not letting my pace outweigh my purpose. So I talked about having my son in 2016. I launched on January 10th of 2017, and I came out of the gate hard, right? Like there was a lot of quote unquote working mother communities, and I was excited about this little haven of shining the light on women who were making room for family in a new way. So excited about it. 2017 to 2018, there was great sort of organic growth. I had my daughter in 2018, and where I'd perfected this like perfect 2 days a week, you know, I was consulting at the time and working on this platform, I had sort of thought I'd nailed it. And then I had my daughter, and it like upended any sense of rhythm that I'd constructed. And so it was like I was hitting pause on pause on pause on pause. And then 2019 came and I was like, okay, this is going to be the year. And then I had shingles. And then 2020 came. And then it was 2021 when both my kids were school aged. And there was sort of this incredible divine timing where suddenly the world and culture felt ready to re-examine work and family in a way that they hadn't, right? And you talked about the pandemic being a potential catalytic moment for a lot of your guests. And so even though I started noodling on this in 2016 and really putting it out of the world in the world then, 2021 and post-pandemic was really the moment I said, no, this is the time to step in and really drive this conversation. And it happened to align with personal timing too. But there was a lot of planting the seeds in the years prior. And then when the timing worked for myself and my family, dialing it up.
Right. Did you see specific moments of growth? You're like, okay, you have a significant following on Instagram, and that's probably where a lot of this kind of audience evaluation is coming from. I remember Dr. Becky's often talked about, and she talked about it on this podcast, how she had went on Instagram like the day before the lockdown or something crazy. Like that was her first video.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was the perfect timing of everyone saying, oh my God, how do I deal with my kid?
Yes.
When I'm locked in with them now, all of a sudden, like, did you see specific moments or specific content that took off?
Yes. So I do think it's funny because I remember she and I messaging back then and then popping back onto her page and being like, what happened? Like, I'm just like a little person again now. And her timing was fabulous. And I think 2021 had a similar feeling for me, but it was 2022 that I saw them. Like 2021, where I had been like, I mean, if you're going to talk about it from Instagram numbers, I was like, had sort of just maintained from the time of my second daughter till 2021. And I think one of the big shifts for me was sharing content as I was like experiencing and living in the pause versus like, I've now studied this and like interviewed 200 women and I'm going to start speaking about it as an expert. And I really shifted into much more of thought leader content around and the reframes that, you know, are shared widely. And I think that that was the catalytic moment of growth. And I think it was 2022 that I really started to share content around reexamining our worth in sort of quantifiable terms, the worth of an at-home parent, sharing reframes around how to think about financial interdependence, you know, with our partners. So if you are the partner not working at home or sort of not working for pay versus providing unpaid labor in the home, how to think about that as like a financially interdependent organization, as opposed to like one of the unfortunate limiting beliefs is like, I am now dependent, and that can feel really hard for an ambitious woman, right? Mm-hmm. So that reframe really took off. Reframes around not feeling like you can't ask for help. I think so many of the women I've interviewed will say, like, if I'm not working for pay, I don't deserve help. So really challenging some of those false beliefs and using social media to do that and have a discourse about that, those pieces of content were shared and really helped grow the audience in a huge way.
How do you sit with that exposure of vulnerability?
Mm.
it's a lot. I mean, sometimes I have these vulnerability hangovers after probably conversations like this. So yeah. How do you handle that?
I'm more boundaried than I think I appear. Like, I really think that I have sort of key content pillars that I am like really happy to have conversations about that I know are going to make a difference for the woman on the receiving end, right? Like, and if I can share about myself and like reflections I'm having about the nature of like, let's take the pace, like knowing that I'm going to move more slowly today and that doesn't mean I'm any less successful. That means I'm being deliberate and that I trust that process, right? Like, sharing that is a personal reflection, but I don't share about parenting. Like, I don't share, like, I will never claim to be a parenting expert. I love parenting. I really do. I think I've grown tremendously in it, but I think I've made mistakes and I think I'm learning. I'm a consumer of other people's wisdom and I'm trying to do the best I can, but I do not talk about, unless it's in the context of parenting's helping me and helps women grow themselves. And that's the ripe opportunity and career pauses. That's the power. That's the unlocked potential. So I really keep it tight as to what are the angles I'm willing to share and explore, but I don't openly share about what it feels like to stay up at night worried about my child and something that they're going through. Like, that's off limits to me, and or my marriage, and or my parents. You know, that to me is irrelevant to a community who's collectively exploring what it means to exist in the gray area of holding personal pursuit and personal ambition alongside motherhood and that constant recalibration.
Well, my Lila loves your Lila. So you're obviously doing a great job in the parenting.
Nice. That's so nice. I hear good reports from there, but like, you know, at home is always different. It's a different level of chaos at home.
Oh God, the level of chaos. It's interesting you say that because I would think of you, you know, if we're trying to think about like a category, like I probably would have put your work in a parenting category because those are the only categories we have. Like, I'm thinking specifically about, you know, when we're submitting podcasts, we have to check in boxes. What right. are we like? Are and we never really know. Like, for She Pivots, like, are we in career business? Are we in parenting? Are we in lifestyle? Like, we're kind of at the center of all of them, but also a little bit none of them.
Yeah.
So I think the idea that you're coming at this only talking about the parent, like only talking about the mother, and not talking about the impact on the child, is smart. And you are creating a new category.
Yeah, I would actually say inversely, the child's impact on the mother, right? Like, I think the act of parenting is enriching, but I think it's interesting because with the book, you have to assign it categories, right? Like, there's a category, but it's nonfiction self-development, right? Like, it's more in the career, you know, one of the big societal tropes, like the big game changer that we're trying to enact is that women on career pauses should still be considered career. Like, it is one chapter of an evolving story of her career, and she can't be counted out. And so it's actually like a lot of this work is keeping her confident and clear that this is one part of her story. And then from a larger macro level, shining a light on the gray area around her role at home, the ways in which she's volunteering, the way that she's networking and meeting incredible women that she's, you know, at the playground, the way that she's taking an online class or freelancing. And so that side of it is just proactively trying to blur the edges so that she is never counted out of the career conversation.
Where do you think people generally find you? Like, do you know, like, do you really have an idea of like who you're speaking to? Like, is it women who are thinking about taking a career pause? Are they already in it? Are they trying to find their way out?
So it's 15% or 15 to 19. It like fluctuates depending on the month, are like in the preparing. Then there's a significant majority who are on the pause. And then the remaining is starting to edge their way back into freelance consulting small business. A lot of the gray. There's just so much movement between those, right? And then there's like 10% that are returning to the workforce, like the traditional workforce.
What do you feel like people ask you the most they want advice on?
How to deal with the stigma, which is the hard, you know, it's both the thing I can probably speak volumes about, right? Like, you know, because I had to do that personal work. And it's the thing that I like am most committed to changing to a world. You know, we recently released the results of the AMP survey, American Mothers on Pause. It's the first of its kind survey of 1,200 stay-at-home moms and then 1,000 general pop. And it was really centered around taking a closer look at this new woman making room for family life. And from a general population perspective, we really wanted to understand perceptions. And what's wild is 78% of women say they feel completely misunderstood for their role at home. Hmm. You know, that's the disconnect that we want to solve for, because it's one part feeling completely undervalued for the contributions of unpaid labor, because where that holds you back is then your ability to ask for help. And when you ask for help, then you help your mental health, you help your ability to stay connected to the workforce and other community contributions in other ways. But in the other way, like, that misunderstanding makes it very challenging for women to reenter.
I want to get to that piece, the child care, having whatever child care and support looks like in your family in different homes. I do feel like, for me, I'm transparent about a lot of things. That's something that still feels too vulnerable for me to talk about, feeling judged in it or not judged in it or whatever the case may be. You've been quite open about it. How did you come to being so open, and how does it feel?
I really feel committed to that transparency because I think it helps women ask for the help that they deserve. And I really do believe that it is. I mean, I think I came to that conclusion for a few reasons. One, because I didn't want to perpetuate this idea that I could create and build a platform like in the fringe hours of motherhood.
Yes.
Like that illusion, because you have to remember that there is a my community is mainly centered on women that either have part-time, very intermittent childcare or none. And so I never want that woman to feel like my day wasn't purposeful because I didn't share like 500 Instagram stories and reframes that are going viral. Like that isn't, we cannot all share the same metrics of success and the same metrics of productivity in a day, but we certainly can't if we don't understand the other person's support system, right? And also, I had to remember for myself in a personal experience, right? Because I had, you know, I had sort of oscillating levels of care, mostly not because of I have the privilege to be able to have childcare if I want it. I really just don't like people in my space. Like, I am like a very classic only child. And so when I'm with my kids, I want to be with my kids and I don't want anyone else around. So it worked for me to have 2 days of childcare, sometimes 3 afternoons of childcare. It just sort of depended on the phase we were in. But and I would look around and think, like, I could be doing more. I should be doing more for Mother Untitled. And I had to remind myself, but like, I don't have the support to do that right now. And I will one day, and I'm in that day right now. One day, my children will be at camp from 9 in the morning till 4:30, and I will have that time. But it was really important for me to remember and reflect on that myself and to make sure that other women weren't comparing themselves to me. And how do I feel about it after I share? Sometimes I feel nervous. I feel nervous that someone's going to turn around and be like, and someone did say this, well, you're not truly fully an at-home parent because you have, you know, X amount of hours of childcare, to which I would say, like, great, because I'm trying to dismantle the trope of like a black and white nature of an at-home parent. You're right. I'm somewhere in between. And I'm so lucky to be able to do that.
I think it does open up the conversation. I mean, we get this question a lot talking about people's pivoting, is there is a presumption that pivoting is a totally privileged opportunity. I thought going into the first season of this that was a big priority for me to dismantle. Mm-hmm. And so we have had guests on that have used government programs, government assistance. You know, we had one guest who was renting out a tent in her living room as an Airbnb, you know, to be able to get by.
She definitely doesn't have a problem with people in her space.
No, that was like a whole nother level. Really? That's anybody on Airbnb? She's like, yeah, it didn't go long. And I do still see it as a priority for me to have those stories on and continue to tell those stories. But I actually think that there is such an abundance of, because it is the stigma and it is societal, of women who consider themselves professional and white collar and high achieving, who thought they had options. Like, the options are what make them anxious.
Yes. Yes.
And because you always, like you said, you always felt like you were supposed to be doing more. You always think you're supposed to be doing more. When I think about this show as the opportunity for culture change by opening up and telling stories, I think maybe that's a more impactful path for us right now. Mm. Like, us me being like, you know, she pivots in the team. And I don't mean to say this as to suggest that what you should be doing. You should be doing what you are doing.
Yes, but I know what you're saying. And it resonates because I do think often that is the pushback, right? And I will, you know, I have deep thoughts on that I share about, but where I come back to is if you are in the privileged position to be able to do this work and shine a light on people navigating nonlinear careers and making the best choices for them and their family, and you can do the work of dismantling stereotypes and opening up options, there's a ripple effect there. And so I'll tell you also in the AMP survey, 3 in 10 women had to make the choice to pause their careers because of the cost of childcare. So yes, we often speak to and speak about the other 70% for whom it was the privilege to choose. But the ripple effect when we change the perception of the pause is felt by everyone. It's felt also by the women who don't get a right to choose. And I would say the same for you, because women come across, men and women come across pivots for a whole onslaught of reasons. But whatever the profile of the guest you have, you're shining a light on this very big, powerful moment where women are transitioning and it's unlocking huge amounts of opportunity. And it's sort of, you're infusing trust into that process that can be really hard. And that is felt by everyone, right? Yeah.
Well, we actually haven't gone through your own personal story. I mean, we did a little bit at the beginning, but like, can you give us like a little bit more background into the background that got you there? Also the fact that we went to college together, but actually
yeah, I know, but didn't know each other.
Yeah.
Because, and I really think this is why. So I guess the conversation starts with, you know, I've been reflecting on why am I more risk tolerant? Because I do think that a fair amount of taking a pause and feeling so trustworthy of that pause comes with a sense of self-trust, right? And risk. I'm not going to discount that. And I think it came from when I grew up in a very small town outside Boston. It was predominantly white. And I'm not going to go on like a big racial tangent, but I will tell you, I did self-sabotage, honestly, in my teen years to fit in. I think I wanted to dismantle. I was all about dismantling stereotypes even then. And I wanted to dismantle the stereotype of being an Indian girl. So I was like, best thing to do is like tank my math grades, you know, or like party really hard or do whatever. And I woke up one day, it was the like morning of my graduation. And I said to my parents, I don't know how I had this one moment of wisdom because I hadn't had many, but I came downstairs and said, like, if I go to college right now, I'd already been accepted. But I said, like, if I go now, this like path is just going to continue and I need to take a pause. And I went to India for a year. My parents were like, you do whatever you need to do to get back on track. And I felt like breaking from the path was what I needed to return to myself. Like that trip started with like 3 weeks in the Himalayas, and I'm not outdoorsy. Like I claim to be many things. I'm not outdoorsy, except there was something about separating from everyone and everything and all the expectations and all the wanting to fit in that you come back to, okay, what do I really like? What do I not really like? What do I want my life to look like? And that was a gift from breaking from the path. And I think that that gave me the trust to obviously replicate that experience in motherhood, mm-hmm. you know, decades later. But in between, I came back. I did go to college. I think I came back to college with like a very renewed sense of ambition. Like I think I really went to college to just go. Like I just wanted to get through it. And I graduated in 3 years, started a career in advertising. I got lucky because I started in the like advent of digital media. So like Twitter had just launched and they basically were like, oh, you're 22 years old. Like you seem like you know what you're doing. Like you should probably do this. And mom blogs was my beat. Like that was what I was, so hilariously, that was what I was assigned to work on. And I fell in love with women. I fell in love with digital media. My boss took me over to start digital strategy at a larger agency called Hill Holliday. So I got lucky. I got some like lucky timing, lucky breaks, had a really nice career there focused on mom brands. And I knew I wanted, again, like a pause. I wasn't ready to part with the perceptions and optics. Like I was still in my late 20s. Like I wasn't about to take a career break then, but I did go to business school. That was my juncture. That was my train stop to surround myself with smart people, figure out what came next, came back.
And you went to like the top business school.
I did. It was the only one I applied to because I really did. I don't think advertising people usually go to business school. Like that isn't a typical path, but I think Stanford is like really, really receptive of that sort of unique non-traditional background. So it was the right school for my background and my what I wanted to do. And I came back. I thought I'd be in the startup world. And then I had my son. And I think motherhood was sort of this incredible collision of two things. It was similar to business school, a train stop to like surround myself with incredible people. And that's something I talk about all the time is that like I met some of the most diverse women across industries on the playground, like in baby classes, because otherwise I'd been in the like halls of ad agencies. I'd met one specific type of person, one specific type of industry prior to that. And so it was a real opener and expander in that way. And the other thing it brought up was that time, like back in the Himalayas and then teaching in India where, you know, when you're stripped away from other people's expectations, the ego of like trying to fit, you can really figure out like what really matters.
Yeah. Is there anything we haven't covered? We've covered a lot.
We did cover a lot.
What's the main point that you want to get across? What do you want people to know about when they hear about Mother Untitled?
You know, we really are like, yes, we're an oasis for women on career pauses to come and surround themselves with women that help them feel confident and still connected to their creativity and the opportunity in their career pause. But it's also, above all things, it's a movement to change and dismantle the tropes around stay-at-home motherhood so that women can choose to pause or shift and exist in this like vast gray area between stay-at-home and working mother so that we can make the right choice for right now and transition back to the workforce when we're ready.
What is one thing that at the time you saw as like a real negative and now in retrospect, you really see it as maybe having put you on your path?
You know, short term, I'll tell you that in 2018, 2019, it was really hard to look around and see the Wing was blowing up. Hey Mama was growing. You know, there were all these amazing women-led companies. Obviously, they've all had their challenges, you know, since. And I wished I really saw what I was doing as big. And yet I couldn't make it big at that moment, right? Like I was in the depths of postpartum anxiety, transitioning to two children, like sitting there being like, I don't even like know how to split my hours up in the day, let alone like run this thing alongside. And I don't think I would have sold, I'd wanted to write this book, The Power Pause. I wanted to write it back then. But if I tried to sell that book in 2018, it wouldn't have sold.
No.
Timing is everything. Everything. 2022, they were ready. 2023, they were ready. I was ready. And so there's a lot around trusting timing.
Yeah. I think that's an important point that we should bring out more. I feel that even when I'm booking guests for this show, that if someone says no, like I don't take it as like a no forever. I'm like, well, our timing was off. Like I'll come back to you, or they come back to me. Like maybe I'm ready to have a different kind of guest on or have a different kind of conversation.
Well, a different conversation because the conversation evolves, right? Like I think back in 2018, it would have been so personally rooted in living it. And for me now, with sort of the plethora of women we've gotten a chance to interview on the site and profile, it sort of opened up the angle and all the angles we want to cover, like and all the phases of the journey and the areas that women need support in a way that were still unknown to me. And I feel like I think we'll all keep exploring it. Like your season 10.
Yeah.
Gonna look a lot different. It's called He Pivots. Like who
apparently,
knows?
Apparently we just announced 10. It.
Yeah. Here.
Breaking news.
I think our husbands are going to be like the first ones on it.
I know. It's definitely.
First guess.
I know. It does often surprise people to find out my husband was an army officer and.
I did not know that. Oh, yeah. That's good.
Yeah. My husband was an army officer. He went to West Point and he served 2 tours in Iraq. And now he just like, you know, gets by as one of the
regular
suburban
people.
Dads. I know. In a community where no one's in the military.
I need to understand how you guys met.
Blind date. We were set up on a blind date.
Wow.
And I was working in military personnel policy at the time. So it didn't weird me out that he was in the Army. He was out by then, but.
But he was in D.C.
Yeah, yeah. We were in D.C. Yeah. And there's so much military community in D.C. anyway that you're like a little more in it. But I mean, even when I told my friends from the Upper West Side of Manhattan that my new boyfriend went to West Point and served in the Army, they were like, oh,
is he okay?
Like, is he okay? Does he feel like TBI? And so it kills a lot of people. I was like, no, it's pretty normal.
Does he watch Homeland? Did he watch Homeland?
No,
was
I did.
Stressful?
I think he just didn't find it interesting. He has a very high tolerance.
It's like chefs watching Bear right now.
Oh, yeah. No, he has a very high tolerance for travel I would consider unsafe. He has a very high tolerance for that. Like right before the Iran deal, he went on a vacation in Iran.
Oh.
He said it was the best trip he ever took. But he's like, he went to Afghanistan for fun. Like he was not deployed there. It's very high tolerance for that kind of travel.
Where's he from?
New Jersey.
Huh. Like all the adventurers are. Wow.
Yeah, the land of all the big adventurers.
That is so fascinating to me. You know, Dan and I met and then our dating was transatlantic. Our dads connected us because they worked together in the 90s. They connected us for work.
This is biblical.
Is it?
Nearly. Yeah.
And our life was travel. Like our dating was entirely travel. I think it expedites relationships.
Interesting. Wait, so you guys, your dads were set you guys up, but just for work?
They set us up just for work. So Dan was in tech and I was in I was on the digital side of advertising. They did not. I mean, I'm not Jewish. I converted, as you know. And they, his parents most definitely did not want us to be together.
Oh, really? That was a thing?
Yeah, yeah. No, that was a thing.
How have you managed that?
Well, I converted, so I checked that box. And then I did a lot of therapy because, as you can imagine, I mean, per like what I just said about my upbringing, I had all sorts of belonging stuff. So then I like went from like not belonging in like Waspy Town in Boston to like now I don't belong in this like very Jewish family. So, you know, I did a boatload of therapy. And in the end, I think time is everything. Timing is everything, right? Like everyone takes an adjustment period. Like there was a learning curve of like, wait, this isn't going to disrupt our entire life. Like she's actually one of us in like other ways. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, my marriage isn't going to implode if they don't approve of like every single thing I do. Like this isn't like, this is safe. Yeah, time.
Neha, this has been such a great conversation. We really covered a lot of ground. My favorite always kind. Decorating always on the next podcast.
Please. We'll just do a house tour.
Perfect. I hear those are big on YouTube.
Oh, really? I'm still learning on video, so you can teach me.
Well, we can bring house tours to podcasting.
We're coming up with a lot of things for season 10. Season 11.
It's going to be huge. Neha, thank you so much for joining She Pivots.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this Candid Convo episode of She Pivots. Check back in weekly for more conversations with inspiring women. To learn more about our guests, follow us on Instagram at She Pivots the Podcast. Leave a rating and comment if you enjoyed this episode to help others learn about it. A special thank you to our partner, Marie Claire, and the team that made this episode possible. Talk to you next week. She Pivots is hosted by me, Emily Tisch Sussman, produced by Emily Etta Voloshik, with sound editing and mixing from Nina Pollack, and research and planning from Christine Dickison and Hannah Cousins.
I endorse She Pivots.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit.
For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.